GAA on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
So last night, the 14 players who stepped away from the Mayo Ladies football panel this year, citing welfare issues, held a press conference. In it, they outlined in more detail the events that led to their decision to step away from the county panel. Here is the full audio of that press conference.
I first of all want to introduce myself. My name is Sarah Tierney and I was the captain of the Mayo Ladies until I stepped down earlier on this year. I first of all want to welcome you all here tonight and thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedules to be with us. Please bear with us tonight. As you can imagine, we're in a very unfamiliar environment. We're not used to a setup like this in front of us. And I just want to stress as well that a lot of us here are not comfortable being in the limelight, and I suppose we're even more uncomfortable with things that have been said about us over the last few weeks, and that is why we are all here tonight. We want to speak up and we know it is the right thing to do. We're here to discuss three broad points. Firstly, we want to just clarify some untruths about this whole situation. Secondly, we want to address the reasons as to why we left the Mayo Ladies this season. And lastly, we want to run through a timeline of events that occurred this year. So as you can see from around me, there's 14 people sitting and standing in front of you. I just want to make it clear that we did not step away from Mayo football because of one or two people. Each one in this group either witnessed or experienced an environment that we felt we could not operate or stay within. Again, I want to stress that everyone is here of their own free will. We are ready to speak up. We want to speak up and we know it is the right thing to do.
Fiona, there were some untruths there that Sarah mentioned. Can you clarify what those untruths are?
Yeah, so firstly, just we accepted in the silence that many people have made judgments about us and about our reason for leaving. And, you know, we take full responsibility for that because at the time we felt it was the right thing to do. And when we felt that there was no resolution going to happen, we felt that we were better off to keep our counsel on everything. And we did that for ourselves. We also did that for the benefit of Mayo football at the time because the girls were still in championship. And out of respect for them, we felt there was no need to drag things through the media. So we feel now is the right time to speak. Now, there has been some untruths. So in the media, the general public, online, on social media, you know, it's been well documented that people believe that the reason why we left was because of selection issues and also because of the Cora issue, or the Cora show, as we might call it. So firstly, selection issues. You know, there are usually competitive people here in this room. Like, we all want to win, we all want to be at our best, we all want to perform. Obviously, everyone wants to be on the starting 15, that's why we play sport. We're usually competitive. Just with regards to starting 15, this was not the reason why we left, and I just want to clarify that right now, that it was nothing to do with selection issues. However, this is crucial to understanding why this happened. The opportunity for some people to learn and improve is not given by the manager. Sorry, I need to start that again.
No, it's fine. Yeah, it's perfect. Do you need me to move that microphone?
So obviously we're very competitive people and obviously everybody wants to make the starting 15. When you don't make the starting 15, obviously you're very disappointed and obviously you're going to try and find a way to bridge that gap and get back to the starting 15, and you're mad to try and find a way or find out when you're going to get back starting again. However, and this is crucial to understanding why this happened, the opportunity for some people to learn and improve is not given by the manager. The manager referred to this on his podcast that he has a commitment to equality, but we never saw evidence of this commitment. We would consider what equality is that it's having respect for everybody, having respect for everyone at the same level. Just some examples to show that this was not an environment that we were in was that some people were not given feedback. Some people directly asked for feedback off the manager and they were not given it. One girl did not make the starting 15 for the Connacht final, and during an individual meeting she had after the Connacht final, she was given feedback then as to why she wasn't starting, and the feedback she was given was that she was lazy. Another player was told that she wasn't committed enough despite having only missed one training all year. We, like, there's four of us here who were starting this year, or started in the Connacht final, and then majority of people here have all had significant game time. So why would we leave for those reasons? Why would we leave for selection issues? It's absolutely crazy for people to even think that, or for it to be even suggested by people. So I want to clarify that that was not the reason we left. The other untruth is the Cora show. So it's been said in the media that the reason why we left was orchestrated and led by Cora Staunton. This is not true. It's been documented in our manager's interviews since we've left the panel. And, you know, there's probably good reason for this, for people to think that it's all about Cora. When, number one, there's been a lot of interviews with him over the season with regards to Cora, and she was at the centre of a lot of issues, even when she was away in Australia, and even when she wasn't even on the panel. For example, at the start of the year, in January or in December, our manager made phone calls to players and told them, and was very clear, that this would not be the Cora show this year, that Cora would actually be on the bench, despite the fact that she wasn't actually on the panel at the time, and she obviously wasn't even in the country. Another example then is that in a young player from our club, in an individual meeting she had with the manager, she was told that Cora was a negative impact on her. She was told she was a negative impact, she wasn't asked was Cora a negative impact for her, and that actually raised alarm bells for a lot of us.
Cora, were you aware that this was going on? Because, I mean, as Fiona outlines, this is there from an early point, but it has been played out in the media that this is a row between you and Peter.
No, I suppose, you know, when I was in Australia, I was kind of in my own little bubble in a vacuum, and didn't know any of this was really going on. I suppose I was in contact with Peter, and, you know, Peter in his podcast had said we hadn't been in contact. You know, he was in contact with me while I was in Australia over, you know, a number of different things, wishing me good luck in matches and stuff, and in our last round match, wishing me good luck especially. And when I arrived back from Australia, the first I really heard of it, I was on the way down actually from the airport, and there was a Facebook Live interview with Peter done by the LGFA, and that was the first I'd kind of heard of, you know, a bit of negative press about me. You know, Peter came out with a few comments from that Facebook Live interview. You know, a couple of days after that, I had contact from Peter to see would I be coming back and would I meet up. So from then, when I come back, I was having contact with Peter, but didn't realise there was issues. It wasn't probably till I came back into the panel, and, you know, I kind of just came back in and trained and put my head down, and I could start to see then that there was, you know, my friends and my teammates were struggling in this environment, and, you know, I said to myself, I can't do this, you know, I can't see these girls really, really struggling, and, you know, their mental health has been affected. So, you know, I don't know where Peter's attitude had changed around me, you know, from the time being in Australia. You know, I you know, it's not to say that I didn't have issues with Peter, but we always had a very good working relationship. And I know he changed role from coach to manager. But yeah, no, I certainly didn't know the majority of it until I came back into the panel, which was towards the end of May.
So he said it was in the podcast that it was selection. So when the statement was released that it was player welfare issues sensitive to the players involved, like, what exactly are those?
So again, I just want to clarify what the girls said. We didn't leave because of Cora, and we didn't leave because of selection issues. For me personally, I would have noticed negativity within his management style from the outset of the year. So I'll give you a few examples. I was actually late returning to the Mayo panel this year. I returned on the 12th of January. I was sitting exam, so I was away. And when I returned to the panel, we had our training the first night. To just give you a brief background, I had actually a very good relationship with Peter in 2017 and 2013 when he was involved with us previously. So my first night back, the majority of the training was all running, and I just said a passing comment to him being like, geez, Peter, is it going to be all running tonight? Or are we going to do any football? I didn't mean anything malicious by it. It's not my character. And anyways, the following night, I received a phone call from Peter about the comment I made. And he basically attacked me on the phone and basically said he didn't give a F how many All-Stars I had or what name I had made for myself in football, that he was the manager and that what he says goes this year. He didn't care what name anyone had, that he would have no problem dropping someone that stepped out of line. He also said to me that night on the phone call that he would be making a call to Marie Corbett as well about her behaviour, that it was inappropriate at training. Now, the tone and the context of this conversation kind of set the tone for the year ahead and any encounters that I had with them. Like time and time again, obviously my role as captain, I was going to him about questions and comments, and it was constantly thrown back in my face about negative comments about my personality or about my performance. There's a few more examples as well. On the 30th of May, we had training in Rochford Bridge up the country. And at the end of the training, everyone was kind of gone. And I just went up to Peter and I was like, look, Peter, we kind of have a big issue in the backs all season in the league. We're conceding high scores. I think there's a massive communication issue here. And I think maybe if we could get a past player in to either come in as a player or a guest coach and maybe just talk us through a few things, I think it would really add value to the setup. So he just took it on board that night. The following Friday night, the 1st of June, it was approximately 6:30 down in the Centre of Excellence. I'll never forget it. He came in and gave me the curly finger, as he called it, and summons me out of the room, and I just knew what was coming. I was brought away from all players, from all of management, and it was like a personal attack that evening. I can only describe it as I've never felt so intimidated in all my life. He basically said to me that I was getting absolutely roasted at training, that I was performing absolutely shite, and that the reason that I was so distracted the previous night of training is because I was so caught up with going to him about this suggestion of bringing this guest player in. And he was doing this action, you're listening to the others. I was kind of like standing back, and he was getting like visibly aggressive with me at this stage. And it was probably the first time that I stood up to him, and I was like, who are these others that you're referring to? Like, I don't understand what you're on about. And anyways, like the conversation ended that night, but I swore driving home that night from training that never again would I be in a one-on-one situation with him unless the liaison officer was there, because I just felt totally intimidated. Again, there was another example on June the 8th. It was 2 weeks before our Connacht final. We'd played Roscommon in a challenge game, and as I was leaving the dressing room, I saw about 10 players, which is nearly a third of our panel, over at a car with Denise as well. And there was a player visibly upset, and I was like, what is going on here? And Peter had mistreated this player and excluded her from the team that evening and just treated her really badly. And me and Denise were consoling this player, and Denise was apologising to this player. This player was told that she wasn't selected on the team and that night on purpose, and that she wasn't going to make the Connacht final squad. So 2 weeks beforehand to tell this to a player is just not acceptable. So while me and Denise were consoling this player, the manager was upstairs having a laugh and joke with another girl who's good friends with the girl who was upset, saying, oh, you'll have a fun journey home tonight. Like, that in my eyes is just not acceptable. And like, throughout the year, I've had a really difficult relationship with the manager. I can honestly say it was repetitive. It wasn't a once-off occurrence. And on a number of occasions, it was just overly, overly aggressive. And like, I don't know what I did to deserve this. And like, I feel like my role as captain, like, I couldn't perform it to the best of my ability because I was completely being undermined. I felt isolated, paranoid, intimidated. And I started to lack hugely in my own self-confidence because of it. And like, a lot of the issues that I would have spoke to him about that led to these interactions were in relation to like attendance at training, communication between players, and strength and conditioning, requesting an upper body gym program, like, which I feel is very much within my right as captain to ask and to demand the best. And I was just constantly, constantly shut down.
What did you do about it? I mean, Denise, you're part of the management team. Did they come to you? Did they express these concerns?
I suppose from a management perspective, personally, I invest a lot of time and energy into players. For me, being involved is all about the players and facilitating the players to perform. So I would have a very vested interest in the girls, and I would like to think that I had a very healthy and positive relationship with the majority of girls involved. In particular, I suppose I would speak to Sarah quite regularly as the team captain, you know, to make sure that there were, you know, was there any issues that we needed to be aware of. So I suppose, yes, I was aware that there were issues. I was certainly aware of the various attempts that Sarah was making to try to address and progress these issues. I may not have been aware to the full extent as they were occurring, but certainly in the aftermath, they were definitely brought to my attention. For me personally, there were issues evident. And from my perspective, the main issues were a lack of communication, a lack of transparency, and a lack of respect, not just for the player body, but also within the management team as a whole. So I suppose, as Sarah has alluded to, in her, conducting her role as captain, I would have shared kind of a similar experience in conducting my role. My role was a selector. That's a role that I felt that I wasn't performing, that I wasn't really permitted to perform. So much so that, you know, I had started to consider my position as selector. You know, I felt I just wasn't permitted to perform that role. I often felt that I was, you know, undervalued or even belittled if I came with suggestions or opinions. You know, I was very aware of an environment of, it's very hard to describe it, you know, of uncertainty or a lack of transparency. My frustrations kind of increased around the timeline of the Connacht final, you know, the leading up to the Connacht final and the aftermath. Obviously, that's a peak level of our season, so everything started to become intensified. And I suppose so much so that I confided in another member of management and the liaison officer, who were absolutely brilliant and a huge support to me. They understood what I was trying to articulate, and they were hugely sympathetic, and they offered really great personal support to me at that time. Unfortunately, it kind of came to a head for me on the 28th of June, which was prior to any player here removing themselves to the panel. I ultimately expressed to the manager that I no longer wish to continue as selector, a decision that really, you know, hurt me personally to have to make, because I'm a very passionate person, but I'm exceptionally passionate about Mayo and Mayo footballers in particular. So despite the fact that I felt I wasn't performing in the role of a selector, I still wished to stay involved and contribute in some way to the players that were within in the setup. So to kind of give you an example of why I felt or how I wasn't valued as a selector, there's one incident in particular that kind of stands out. It was a week before the Connacht final. Again, you know, we're operating in a high performance environment and stakes are high and it's critical and everything else that goes with it. We'd had a particularly bad day in a training match. Tensions were very high. Performance was particularly poor. So in an attempt to kind of salvage something objective or positive from the day, I was aware that two of our players we had selected to be in the starting lineup for the Connacht final were now in doubt whether or not they'd be medically fit to start. I sought counsel from our chartered physiotherapist, who advised me we were probably best off to plan and prepare without the services of both individuals. So with that in mind, I approached the manager and the other selector and said, look, you know, maybe we should come up with a contingency plan and you know, war game for possible other outcomes. I could only describe the particular environment as tense. The manager was clearly, you know, disappointed and frustrated with the performance throughout the training session. But in reaction to my suggestion, he aggressively lifted his gear bag off the bench, threw it onto the ground, and kind of said, okay, let's hear it. Let's hear your bright ideas. So I proceeded to give my bright ideas, which obviously two players were not perhaps available for selection. So I continued to offer two particular players that had performed, in my opinion, exceptionally well in the preceding training match. To say that, like, the reaction, I was completely dismissed and I felt definitely undervalued and almost belittled. In fact, in response to one of the players that I highlighted that had a positive performance, the manager's reaction was to ask me if I was blind or stupid or both. And I think kind of at that point I understood that really and truly my role as a selector, I was being paid lip service to in that capacity.
Just on that as well, I want to just go back to the point, sorry, I raised earlier, With that issue of the player being upset after training, myself and Fiona and another player on the Saturday decided to meet with the manager, to have a meeting with the manager on the Sunday morning. So I text the manager on Saturday and I said, look, is it okay if we meet you? And he was like, text back bluntly, being like, about what? So I just said, communication. So on that Sunday morning, myself, Fiona, another player who has since remained with the panel, the liaison officer, Peter, and a selector, we all held a meeting and we discussed this issue and how this player was treated unfairly. And we just had to agree to disagree. And like, the only way I can describe the behaviour in that meeting was very aggressive towards me and Fiona. He sat up over us looking at us. And I felt that it was my chance to address my communication issues with him. So like, we did try to find solutions to problems. And I said, look, Peter, I'm captain. And we've got to the point where I cannot come to you. I cannot communicate with you. Every time I come to you, I feel like you think I'm questioning your authority. I'm like, you're constantly throwing it back in my face. Like, being negative comments about my personality or about my performance. Like, we can't continue to do this. I'm failing in my role as captain. I cannot represent these group of girls like I should be able to. And he was just standing there staring at us, or sitting there staring at us. And it wasn't till I visibly got upset in that meeting that his whole body language changed towards me and Fiona. And he said, like, obviously that we'll have to try work on it. And just before we were concluding the meeting, he just goes, well, to be honest with you, Sarah, 70% of the stuff you come to me is rubbish anyways. And like, I just felt like, oh, there we go again, completely undermining me. And like, 70% of the stuff that I was going to him wasn't rubbish. It was like going to him about an upper body strength and conditioning program. Like, I mean, look at the All-Ireland yesterday between Dublin and Cork ladies. Like, well, you're not going to go out and compete with them if you're not doing upper body gym work. And like, just different things throughout the year. Like, I think that was really harsh of him to say 70% of the stuff I go to him was rubbish.
How has this whole thing affected your health?
Well, like, at the end of the day, like, I'm working up in Dublin and like, I'm lucky enough that I'm away from a good bit of it, but people still are like, oh, what's going on? Like, and even in at work, I'm breaking down and getting emotional. Like, it's took a massive toll on our mental health. And like, a lot of the girls are based here in Mayo. They can't go up the street without people asking them. And like, I fully understand people do want to know what's going on, but at the end of the day, like, our mental health has taken a serious toll on, like, with everything that's going on. And like, mental health, mental fitness, psychological health, you name it, it is an issue in sport and in society at the moment. It's a massive issue. And I know the GAA have an initiative as well. It's called Play in Your Boots. And they accept that there is mental health issues around being on the being on the pitch and playing and training. And like, you know, we talk about player welfare issues, and I know Peter alluded to it in the interview the last night on the podcast, and he said, look, at these girls have all the player welfare issues that they could. Like, he referred to a charter physio, he referred to good pitches, to a strength and conditioning coach. And yes, like, we agree, we have all those things, and 2018 was great from that perspective. Like, we fought long and hard down through the years for this. But at the end of the day, like, player welfare is much more than that. Like, as in, mental health is obviously a massive issue at the moment, and I just think it's so disrespectful. And to disregard our emotions as feelings in his podcast the last night, that's so, so disrespectful. And like, there's been rumours spun around about us, about people's sexuality and mental health. And I just think it's absolutely disgusting in this day and age that we're talking about it. Like, the issues are much more sensitive, much more complex, less understood. If we were sitting here complaining about not having a chartered physio or not having a strength and conditioning coach, the whole country would be behind us. But it's because it's issues that have affected us personally that no one understands it, no one gets it.
Cora, language is crucial here, and you describe the environment as unsafe and unhealthy. Do you still stand over that?
Yeah, I suppose perhaps people have different meanings of words, and I acknowledge that. But you know, just from listening to what, you know, Sarah has said and Fiona has said and Denise has said, you know that they're their stories. And so, you know, it's the meanings of words. But yeah, it certainly, for me, from a point of view, it was a very unhealthy environment, and one that we had to, you know, unfortunately remove ourselves from.
Can you give us a timeline of the events of how everything transpired. The Carnacon players, Fiona, I understand, were the first ones to leave.
Yes, I suppose it starts off how the Carnacon girls left was we had individual meetings on June the 30th. This was the first time that the management had met up with any of the players since the Connacht final loss against Galway. So just an example of one of those individual meetings was one of our club girls left the meeting visibly upset, and she never got a follow-up call from any member of management that was there that day. When one of our other players went into the meeting directly after, management was sitting around the table smiling, and it just doesn't seem right. So I suppose we just had a meeting ourselves in Carnacon, and we just decided, look, this is an environment that we probably need to get out of. Now, there was a lot of discussion around it. Obviously, we're all playing with Mayo for a very long time. I'm playing with Mayo for 15 years. Cora's playing with Mayo for, 24 years. Martha has played a very long time as well. And then on the other side, there's some of our club players that they're only playing with Mayo for maybe 1 or 2, maybe 3 years. So they have a full career ahead of them. So it was obviously a massive decision to have to walk away from the panel. And at this point, you know, this was, you know, we really discussed it at length. So at this point, we hadn't decided to leave or anything like that. So at that point, a member of management, my father, he's involved in the management team. He contacted the Mayo management team and suggested that maybe we all meet up and discuss our issues and try and address them. So we met up with management, and we also met up with Sarah Tierney before a training session, and that was on Tuesday, July 3rd. That was probably the first time, just from speaking to Sarah, it was the first time that Sarah actually realised that she shared some of the same experiences as the rest of us. And it was a bit of an eye-opener for her too, and she felt then that maybe she wasn't alone. Just so, like, we had a few issues that day or that evening that we wanted to address. We felt that a lot of the stuff that we said was dismissed and probably didn't feel satisfied coming out of that meeting. One probably concern in particular was something that I alluded to earlier, was the idea that our manager told one of the younger girls from our club that Cora had a negative impact on her. So we brought this up in the meeting, and when we brought this up, he denied it. He said, no, I didn't say that. I did not say that, trying to deflect it off himself. And it was only until two other members of management who were actually in that individual meeting actually said, no, we can confirm that you did say that to her. That just was a concern for us at the time. We said, you know, he's actually denying that he said this, even though the girl, it was Amy, was actually telling him, no, you actually said this to me. So just even that alone was one of the biggest concerns. Also, one of the girls in her individual meetings, who was very, very upset, he actually told us in this meeting, in front of all members of management and in front of about 9 players, that he had reported her to the LGFA and to the county board about her meeting. Now, to tell a player that in front of that amount of players and that amount of the management team, to me, is unacceptable and very, very inappropriate. And again, that was another issue that we came out. We said, look, things aren't right. So at that point then, you know, there was a couple of days there where we had to really soul search and figure out, you know, are we doing the right thing here? Do we want to leave Mayo? You know, this is obviously our passion. This is something, you know, that we live for. It's what we base our whole lives around. So it was a massive decision, and obviously something that we didn't take lightly. So at the end of the day, we decided, look, we're gonna remove ourselves from this environment. We felt we just had to leave. We couldn't go on any longer. So I suppose a lot of questions have been around, you know, Carnacon withdrawing their players from the panel. That is not the case. We all decided that we wanted to leave the panel as individuals, and obviously as a group we had discussed it. There's obviously some girls on our Carnacon panel who were very young, and they didn't feel comfortable ringing up the manager to tell them that they were leaving the panel. It's obviously such a big deal. So we asked our club secretary, would she do it for us on our behalf? We felt that this was the appropriate method to do it when some people didn't feel comfortable doing it themselves. So our secretary rang Peter and withdrew us for us, but we had given her the permission, and it was our individual choice. And I really want to clarify that, because that's probably led to the reason why Carnacon have been pulled out of the club championship, which is still an ongoing appeal at the moment. But again, just want to clarify, we did all leave for our own individual reasons, and we were not withdrawn. without our consent or, you know, from our club. So that then led on to, that was, I'm trying to just look here at my thing. Yeah, so obviously we withdrew from the panel. That was the 8 Carnacun girls. So obviously more players have left since then, and they've all left for the same reasons, despite some media speculation. So I know, Sarah, maybe you can pick up from there.
Yeah, so I was obviously present in that meeting on the Tuesday night, and to me that was an absolute eye-opener. It was probably the first time that I realised, oh my God, I'm not the only one that's been completely undermined this whole year. And I just listened attentively to all the girls, and we had training that following Thursday night. I work in Dublin, so I was coming down from training, and Fiona actually contacted me and said, look, we've just stepped away from Mayo football, and I just couldn't get my head around it. And I was actually late training that night, and I think Peter had called the girls in and spoke to them, but I had missed all that. So I trained that night, and after training I had a chat with Peter, and I said to him, look, Peter, like, what are you going to do about it? Like, there is 8 girls from Carnacun after walking away, like, nearly the backbone of our team. Like, they're the club All-Ireland champions for a reason. Are you going to do anything about it? And he just said, look, I've been on to the LGFA. I had to report an issue, and I got to save my own ass first. And I was totally just shocked by that, like, as in our team was falling apart in front of our eyes. And like, if I was him, I'd be driving up the country trying to meet the girls and resolve it as quick as could be. So with that, on the Friday night, I took it upon myself to organise a players meeting for the Saturday. I gave all the players the option of either morning or evening, and whatever suited the majority we would go with. I just want to stress that none of the Carnacun girls were at that meeting. I took it upon myself to try and fix the massive upheaval within our camp and just try to find a solution moving forward and maybe get everyone back into the one room again. So on Saturday the 7th of July, we had a players meeting. It was at 11 o'clock in Brayfay. And I led the discussion, and I discussed about my experiences the previous 6 months. Probably a lot of players didn't have a clue what was going on behind the scenes, and I never felt it was something that they needed to know, because it's just not a negative thing that players need to be worried about. At the end of the day, I'm their captain. They come to me with issues. And I also spoke briefly on behalf of Carnacun, and I just wanted to stress that the reasons that the Carnacun girls left was not down to anyone in the room, and it was not due to any selection issues. So within that meeting, it was a very open discussion. 6 other players spoke, and we did make a distinction between constructive criticism and between getting personal. And the 6 players that spoke, it was very personal, the manager, the way he treated them. And collectively as a group, we all agreed that the behavior of our manager was just not acceptable. And with that, one person in the room did suggest that maybe we were to remove the manager, and that player is still continuing in the panel, and there was an open discussion about it, and there was discussed the pros and cons of him staying and of him going. But it was equally discussed, like, that he would stay on as our manager. And with that, we decided that there was 6 girls absent from that meeting that day. And I just want to point out that I have all my notes from that meeting, and there was 20 players present that day. Peter said in his podcast the last night that there was 12. There was actually 20 players there, and 6 players missing. And as a group, we said that we'd have to have a meeting the following day. And that was a collective decision to have another meeting and to have everyone in the room, a compulsory meeting. And we wanted the Carnacun girls there and to voice exactly for themselves why they left. It's not up to me to talk on behalf of anyone. I mean, we're all grown adults, and we were leaving that meeting that day. We set up an agenda to basically keep times of things, and we said, look, with our meeting tomorrow, we just have to listen to each other. We have to just listen, and we have to, whatever move we do going forward, it's going to be a united move. And we did accept that with whatever solution we came up with, we were going to lose players regardless. So that was the Saturday morning. We all left in good spirits, and that evening I was made aware that the manager And players who were not at that meeting were ringing around, and basically management were telling other players that I was being influenced by Karen O'Connor not to go to this meeting the following day. And subsequently, that meeting was pulled by the county board and by a number of players, a number of players who were not at the meeting on Saturday as well. And with all that, I just felt like I had tried my hardest. I tried to get everyone into the one room to come to a solution, to try and move forward, because I do believe there was an All-Ireland final in us again. And I'm actually really upset and disappointed by it all. And I just felt like I had no other option but to step away from Mayo football.
So I suppose just at that point then, that was the Sunday, and Sarah and Orla left the panel at that point. Now this was an opportunity for us to go and speak to the girls about why we left and what our issues were. And that's something that we regret in hindsight, was that we didn't actually speak to the girls at the time before we left as to why we actually did. I suppose we didn't feel like we wanted to influence anyone else, and we just wanted to leave as a group. So we felt then this was an opportunity that we could actually express our issues to girls, and I suppose speak to them. So it was disappointing then that we didn't get to do that. On that same day, the county board arranged a meeting with everyone who had left the panel. So there was actually 9 of us at the meeting that day. With the county board, they asked us questions. We answered everything that they wanted to know. We were in that room for 2 hours, and we expressed all of our issues to them. So at that point, there was 3 players, Sarah, Elaine and Shauna Howley, who hadn't actually been contacted by the county board at all. Shauna and Elaine hadn't left at that point. Sarah wasn't at that meeting, but has never been contacted by the county board. So the county board actually do not know why Sarah's left, they don't know why Denise has left, they don't know why Elaine has left, they don't know why Shauna has left. 12 players left the Mayo panel. Out of these 12 players, 1 player has been contacted by the liaison officer. None of the 12 players have been contacted by the manager. And 2 players contacted the liaison officer to tell them that they were leaving the panel, and the liaison officer didn't respond. So I suppose that's just an important thing to mention, is the level of contact that we've had since with the man. So then Tuesday, July the 10th, the county board. So after our meeting with the county board that night, I just want to stress as well that we did not make any demands about management to the county board or make any ultimatums to them. We just answered what they needed to know. And we felt that that was them trying to seek if it was, you know, worthy of an investigation. So we never heard back from the county board after that. And we heard then that on Tuesday, July the 10th, that they actually went to Mayo training and they endorsed the management to the Mayo team. I know you were there.
Yeah, I was actually still part of the management at that point. So as Fiona said, that's correct. The county board attended training and they just briefed us. Got all the players in a circle, and they just endorsed this. They said that they fully supported Peter and his management team for now and for the going forward for at least 2 years. So not in the public domain, but once the players broke away and commenced their training session and the county board were separated, I just went across to approach the county board, and I just said, you know, we've lost like 10, we're hemorrhaging players at this stage, there could be more. Is there any, you know, what is the plan, what's the course of action to try to resolve this or find resolution to progress? And I was just told that they had met with people on Sunday night and that as of now they were just going to carry on with what we had. So, you know, I was quite confused and disappointed with that kind of a reaction.
Did you ever officially ask the county board to investigate the issue, or were you satisfied that at your meeting that was understood, that that's what you were asking for?
Yeah, that's what we understood. When we left, our club got notification from the county board that they wanted to meet up with us to find out what was going on and to ask us some questions. And I suppose we felt like that was an investigation in itself. And we sat in a room with the county board and talked about our issues for over 2 hours that night. We expected to hear back from them, and we didn't hear back from them until we heard that they went to Mayo training and endorsed the manager. So we felt at that point that it was their way of saying, we agree with management, we're dismissing your issues, we're dismissing your opinions. they then organised mediation. So at that point then we felt, oh, well, you know, there might be a chance of moving forward here, and it was probably a chance for us again to try and sit down with the players, which had failed previously. Might be a chance to sit down with the players and actually express our issues, and a chance to actually clarify why we left for them, because again, it was something that we did regret that we hadn't spoken to them about. At that point as well, we did release a statement, and the WGPA released a short statement on our behalf acknowledging events and also just asking for privacy and respect for all players involved, including the players who remained. The county board then issued a statement on Thursday, July the 12th, endorsing management and stating that they were trying to find some sort of amicable solution, and that was in the form of mediation. At this point, I would just like to clarify that at no stage was anyone here in this room asked or forced to leave the panel by anybody here. Everyone left of their own free will. And I also want to stress that no person in this room ever asked a player who was still remaining on the Mayo panel to leave, despite claims made by Peter on his podcast the other day. He claimed that there was text messages sent to actually try and get some of the girls to leave. That is not the case. Some of the players that are remaining sought our advice on what they should do. And we, you know, at the time, we were in a good bit of contact with a lot of the players still, and some people still are, but what we would have told them was, do what's best for you.
And as Peter said, he said that it's basically down to two players and the rest is out of loyalty. What would you say to that?
That is absolutely not true. If you witness something and you see that it's not right, you could say, yeah, you're being loyal to someone, but if you witness something that's not right and you don't want to be part of that environment, I witnessed things that I feel aren't right. This is about, I suppose, is something okay or is it not okay? And things that I witnessed and things that some of my friends told me about how they experienced the Mayo situation, how Sarah had her experiences. I was with Sarah on numerous occasions where she explained her feelings. I was with Orla when she explained her situation, Howley when she explained her situation. So to me, a lot of that stuff was not okay, and that was our reason for leaving. Not, yes, out of loyalty, but also because I don't want to be a part of an environment like that.
Like he said about the feelings thing, he seemed to kind of swipe away as if it was irrelevant. How did that make you feel when you heard him say that?
Oh, very upset over that. Like, he's just brushed it off as if, like, we're not strong characters or we're just weak people. As well, I just want to point out there, like, the hardest thing to do in this whole situation was to stand up for what was right and walk away. And we've had to deal with massive implications of it. We've been abused on social media. You can't go down the street without someone having a smart comment to you. Like, the easiest thing to do in the whole situation would be to stay within the Mayo panel and brush all the problems under the carpet. And I respect the girls first in for playing on. It's obviously a massive privilege to represent your county. But they collectively agreed with me that day in the room that there was issues apparent, and that's fine if they want to accept that and play on. But like, at the end of the day, we know the difference between right and wrong, and it was so wrong what was going on. And I, for one, have no regrets about my decision, and I respect the girls around me for standing up for what they believe is right as well.
There will be people that are going to say, you're being too sensitive. This was a selection issue. You know, it was he said, you said. What do you say to that?
We're not sensitive
at all. Like, as in, like, I work in a high pressure environment. Like, I'm dealing with issues the whole time. Like, as in, to say that about us is completely like dismissing us and making us out to be weak people. Like, we're strong characters. Like, do we're well able to stand up for ourselves. And like, Denise, you would have
look, we're well aware that we're in a high performance environment. You know, it's not, they're not so, like, I shared a dressing room and played in the same environment with many of these girls. We're well aware of what a high performance environment is and what it entails. You know, it's going to be tough decisions, hard calls, and some tough love. It's going to be present. In fact, it's going to be necessary. You know, we're aware of that. And personally, operating in a high performance environment is something that I'm very familiar and very comfortable with. In my current profession, I'm an airline pilot, commercial airline pilot. My previous career, I was an army officer. In particular, I was a military training instructor. You know, those two professions are critical high performance environments. Okay, so I mean, to say that these are feelings of, you know, that to brush this aside as feelings, to me, I mean, I'm astounded, you know. I'm very familiar with what is required in a high-performance environment. You know, I appreciate that such an environment is always going to be dynamic. It's never going to be perfect. It's going to face constant challenges. But I'm acutely aware of the standards, procedures and policies that have to be in place in order to facilitate performance within such an environment. Equally so, there's a massive duty of care to every individual that's part of that high-performance environment. And for me, that's a huge factor at play here. So personally, I was part of a management team. My role in that part of a management team and the management as a whole is always to facilitate player performance within that high performing environment. And ultimately to ensure that the code of practice and the duty of care is not only honoured, but is absolutely adhered to.
So are you saying there was no, the duty of care was lacking in that management structure style?
Ultimately, having heard the issues, I mean, we've all heard it. It's gone on record. So ultimately, you can draw your own conclusions. But for me personally, yes, there was a failure of the duty of care to every individual. I'm not saying all individuals, but I'm saying some individuals were failed in that environment.
Yeah, because this is the thing here. Like, so we have the players who are currently with the panel who released a statement. How come, and they totally backed the management. They said there has never been player welfare. Welfare issues have never existed within the squad. How come there's a disparity, or there appears to be, between what was said in that statement and what you're saying?
Like, we accept that, like, a lot of the girls that are currently in the panel did not witness or experience any of this behaviour, and like, we fully support them in playing on and continuing for Mayo. And like, it seems to be just a certain few that have been targeted. Maybe people he perceived to be in power. I feel like his motive was divide and conquer. And I just, like, we obviously couldn't stand up for it anymore. That's why we stepped away. And as I said earlier, it was the easiest thing to do was to just brush all the problems under the carpet and continue on, because you weren't going to get the abuse that's going to be hurled your way or anything like that. Do you know, this has actually been deeply upsetting. Personally, I would have a lot of very good friends in the team at the moment, and it's put friendships under strain and everything, and I just think it's really sad. Like, put the football aside, it's gone personal now at this stage, and like, I think everyone is just fed up of it, and we just want it to be over. Like, why aren't we talking about, like, the great ladies sports representatives at the moment? Like, look at Dublin and Cork yesterday. The attention should be on them, not on us, not on negative media. Like, can we just draw a line and get over it now?
Just going back to that meeting, I think that the Saturday, there's a lot of talk that it was kind of a player coup trying to get out the manager. Was it a player coup to try and get out the manager?
No, definitely not. Like, there was four of us here present at that meeting, and like, in that meeting we openly discussed the possibility of him going, but we equally discussed the possibility of him staying as well. And like, as I said, it was an open discussion. There was issues apparent, everyone was in agreement that there was. The main aim from the meeting really was to get the 34 panel into the one room the following day and to move forward as a united group, and maybe even to just come to agree to disagree at some stage. And we were going to lose players probably regardless, but that was the main aim of the meeting. Like, I don't understand why the players come out and use that term.
And Cord, just going back to the you didn't think it was a safe or healthy environment. Can you be more specific as to, because I understand why you probably didn't think you can go into the details, but you can now. What made it, do you feel, not a safe or healthy environment?
Yeah, as I said earlier, acknowledge, you know, everyone has different meanings of words and the implications of them words. But I think from what you've heard from Tierney especially, and from the other girls, you know, as we spoke about mental health, you know, most of the people that have been affected by this, you know, their mental health has really suffered, whether it was in that environment. You know, some of us probably have suffered from coming out of the environment because of the abuse that has happened in the last number of weeks. But to me, you know, the environment wasn't healthy. Girls were really struggling, and you know, when you have girls using words like intimidation, isolation, you know, whatever the other words that they've used, it just, for me, wasn't a healthy environment at all. And, you know, it's sad that you have to sit there and watch people suffer. You know, we're amateur sports people. We just want to play the game. And, you know, to me, the environment wasn't anyway healthy. And, you know, we removed ourselves and wanted to walk away. And, you know, that's 11 weeks ago and we're still here talking about it.
Just to pick up on what Cora said there, just to add to it about being unhealthy, I don't feel it's right that a manager is speaking to a player and advising her to stay away from another player who would be a very good friend of hers. And that happened on a number of occasions about one of the girls in the team, to stay away. And I know that Tierney continued then to isolate herself from a member of the panel as a result. And it caused massive frictions within friendships. And this was happening right throughout the year. And that is not, that's not a healthy environment to be in. I suppose it probably starts to make you feel a little bit paranoid and stuff like that. But these things were happening throughout the year where the manager would have been speaking about a player to me or to Sarah or to Marie. And I suppose trying to turn, you know, in hindsight or looking back or on reflection, probably trying to turn a few of us against each other. That's ultimately what was happening.
So I suppose when Peter that time, he said about like safe as in like there's a physio there, but for you ultimately you were talking about kind of mental health.
Yeah, exactly.
You.
Yeah, well, that's exactly what I was talking about. You know, I'm probably the least, I was the least time spent in the environment because I was the one that didn't come back till the middle of May. So I probably spent 6 weeks in the environment. But from the time I came back and the way I could see that the girls were and how their mental health, and then when I seen it, ultimately when I seen what it had done to our captain and probably one of the stronger characters in our team, I just said, this can't be anymore. And, you know, that's why ultimately we decided, you know, just to step away. As Sarah said, like, not everyone has experienced it, not everyone's seen it, but we certainly seen it in bucket loads, and we decided to go.
Did you have to like talk to somebody about this, like professional?
Yeah, there's a number of us here that have had to seek professional help with this. I mean, like, when you can't go down the street without being asked a question, and that's even in Dublin for me, like, it's taken a massive toll, and everyone's wondering and putting in your ear, what are player welfare issues? What are player welfare issues? And get over yourselves. Like, it's really hard. And like, we were in an All-Ireland final this time last year. We were at the height of our careers, loving life, loving sport, loving Mayo. And what happened in a year is just, it's so sad. And like, this is going to have a massive effect on Mayo ladies football over the next few years. And I don't think people really realise the consequences of it. And that actually breaks my heart, because as captain, I've always wanted the best for Mayo football. Even when I finish, I'd love to see them getting on well. And like, friendships are destroyed now. It's just a battle of he said, she said. And it's just gone beyond a joke at this stage now. And we just want it to be over.
Can any of you see a day that you play football for Mayo again?
We'd all absolutely love to play for Mayo.
So
for Mayo again, absolutely. I think I can speak for most people in the room here that they'd all love to play for Mayo. But, you know, it's not as easy as just shrugging your shoulders, as was mentioned the other day, and just getting on with things. You know, it's much more complicated than that. But ultimately, yes, we all want to play for Mayo. You know, we feel very strongly about that.
You went through mediation in the process and the hope of being able to go back with Mayo. Clearly that broke down, and I know there's things that you can't say about it. But what are you willing to do now, and what are the next steps for you?
Well, I suppose just even with regards to mediation, all 14 of us were at that mediation, and the mediation included the remaining panel, members of management and the county board. Now I know with one of the members of management, I don't know if you want to step in here.
Yeah, that's correct. So mediation occurred, and as Fiona said, there was four groups there. There was what was deemed to be the leavers group, and the remaining group, the management group and the county board group. I share the same passion that the girls have for Mayo football, and, you know, in desperation trying to find a resolution that we can have an open door, that every player feels that they can play for Mayo, and in the kind of naive hope that we could still find resolution. I spoke with another member of management who would have shared my kind of concerns throughout the year. I spoke to the member of management and explained that mediation was happening, and asked if he'd be willing to attend with me in the hope of finding kind of a solution to bring both sides to reunite, to fix our team. He wholeheartedly agreed and said that he would come with me and we would, you know, try to find a solution. It transpired then that that member of management, he informed me that he was contacted by the manager to say that the manager was not one bit pleased when he heard that he was going to attend mediation, and in fact the manager wouldn't permit him to attend the mediation. So disappointingly, we never got that opportunity to try to, you know, really force and progress and find a solution, which at all times I felt was still possible, and that's what we should have been focusing on, was to get everybody back in an opportunity where they could play for Mayo.
So just follow up, Denise, what you were saying earlier, that there wasn't a duty of care. Just break that down, and what does that mean exactly?
Look, like I've said, we're operating in a high-performance environment. There's going to be issues, and from a management perspective, that's what we have to do. We have to manage those issues. You know, it's not going to be perfect. We were certainly aware, especially in the aftermath of the Connacht final, that we were faced with issues. And I suppose directly after that defeat, it was decided that we would have a management debrief at a specific location. Myself and another member of management actually shared that location with the remainder of the management team, which included the physiotherapist, the liaison officer, and our kit man. Our doing so annoyed the manager. He contacted us and expressed his disappointment and annoyance at us doing that because he didn't want the entire management team there, which, you know, already shows a kind of a lack of transparency or a failure of communication. So just that kind of just brings me on to the manager alluded to that actual debrief that was conducted. And he mentioned that I suggested that there was an elephant in the room. So I'd just like to be very clear on what that elephant in the room was. For me, the elephant in the room was the lack of communication, transparency, and respect, both for people within the management team and the player unit as a whole. Okay, and I suppose by virtue of the fact that all the management team weren't welcome at that debrief speaks for itself. So subsequently, during that debrief, it was agreed that, yes, the manager in days afterwards contacted me and he agreed with my assessment, and he actually thanked me for raising the issues that needed to be addressed. He accepted and acknowledged the need for greater transparency and greater communication within the management setup. So I'd like to, you know, put it on the record that we were aware there were issues and we were trying to address them. Okay. The manager also accepted that, without a doubt, there was certainly a requirement to open up clear, concise chains of communication with the players. The way we were going to do that was at the suggestion of another member of management, was by conducting these individual player meetings, which the girls have spoken about. So we were aware that there was issues, you know, and we were willing to try to work and address them, albeit, as you can see by the chain of events, maybe a little bit too late. So like I said, we're in a high-performance environment. It's not going to be perfect. There's going to be challenges. But that is the role of management. We've got to manage the situation, react, address, progress, find solution, and move on.
So as Mayo captain, what has been the toughest part of this whole thing?
Without a shadow of a doubt, the friendships that have been destroyed, to be honest. It was never an issue with players versus players, and I feel like it's been completely deflected away from management, and it's turned into a battle between the players, and I just think that's so sad, because there was serious talent in Mayo to continue going forward between experience and younger players and everything.
I'd just like to go back to the mediation, because we haven't really spoken about it, but I just want to state that we're fully willing to waive our right on the confidentiality agreement, because the process we feel was not fair. And we'd like to actually discuss that, but obviously I'm just letting you know we would like to waive a right to the confidentiality. We didn't feel, even from the outset, that it was fair, in that the, you know, we were kind of worried about it. The county board were paying for it and they organised it. Now we suggested to the mediator that we bring our own mediator as well, because that's common practice, and we were advised on this, and this idea or this notion was dismissed. So we were a bit worried about it. Now we did go to mediation, and we were actually full of hope that maybe we could, you know, find resolution, and you know, go forward with things. But that wasn't the case, and the county board have stated, and it's been documented in the media, that there was no case to answer after that mediation. Now, mediation means that you're looking for an agreement. Whether you find an agreement or not, that's mediation. To have no case to answer, or to state that there was no more issues to be addressed, that's actually arbitration. So I think that needs to be factually corrected in the media.
Just in terms of that then, Fiona, if you're willing to waive your confidentiality agreement on that, what do you expect would happen if you went to the county board and said, look, we're willing to discuss this? What do you think that they would do?
Well, you'd like to hope, like even before all of this, you'd like to hope that somebody would take some sort of leadership and actually sit everyone around a table and actually discuss the issues at hand here. But that has never happened. From the moment we left the panel, there was never an opportunity for us to actually sit down with our teammates and discuss things that have happened, or sit down with management and discuss things that have happened. As I said, 9 of us have been contacted by the county board, but some of us who have left haven't actually been contacted by the county board and don't actually know what their issues were for leaving. So that's one thing. And the other thing is that a lot of players haven't actually been contacted by the manager himself. So I just feel there needs to be more leadership there in trying to actually solve this. Like, for the good of Mayo Ladies Football, like, this is just detrimental to Mayo Ladies Football in my eyes.
Have any of you had contact with Peter Leahy since he left the squad?
He actually got on to me about a job in Clare. But I didn't respond to it or anything. I just thought, after everything that happened, how can he just randomly message me about a job and name drop him and he'll fix me up? That's the only contact that I did respond to it.
I had no contact with him since I left the panel, and he did contact me in the week after Mayo were knocked out of championship. He texted me saying that he had a gum shield that I had bought, and did I want him to post it or drop it off somewhere. So I replied, I gave him my address, and I haven't actually received that gum shield since. So that's the only contact I've had with him.
I've been in contact with Peter since I left. I would have texted him before every match, like I did with all the players that remained, to wish them luck. Initially he would respond, but more recently he hasn't, so I've only been very limited contact, but always just to wish him luck going forward, because like I said, for me, I'm still very heavily invested in, you know, maybe a solution being found, and wishing girls that want to represent our county and anyone that should feel they can return to that environment the best of luck. So I've contacted him to wish him luck, and that's been all. Sometimes I've heard back, but more recently I haven't.
Nearly closing up, I just, he mentioned in that podcast as well that he's and I think he mentioned that equality is what this is all about. When you heard him say that, how did it make you feel?
Equality was actually a strange choice of word, because those individual player meetings that were conducted that I was present at, a lot of themes were risen and points came up, both negative and positive. But one of the main overriding themes that was identified was that there was a lack of equality among, or the players felt that there was a massive gap between the players that were part of the starting 15 in the immediate plans and the players that were outside the starting 15 or not in the immediate plans. And one of the deductions from conducting those player meetings was that we identified equality as an issue that needed to be addressed. So again, like I said, maybe we were acting too late. We were taking action perhaps too late. So I just found that quite an ironic choice of words, considering that one of the main themes was, in fact, we identified equality needed to be addressed.
I suppose just to build on that, and Denise alluded to earlier about the Heysha training session before the Connacht final, where we had a training game, and the 15 players who weren't starting were completely isolated and separated from the starting 15. And to me, that's not equality. That's just, you know, separating what was a unified group. So that's just another example, really, where, you know, they were isolated and they weren't given any direction or feedback from the manager that day.
Just one final question for me. Can someone just describe, you need to get a glass of water. Does anyone want to describe, you're talking about his management style. Someone just sum up how you feel the management style is, if that's something that anybody wants to.
He's alluded to his management style. You know, he has a certain type of management style and has made no apologies for that. And there's many who might have the same management style. We're used to tough managers. We've had plenty of managers in the past, plenty of tough managers, and we're used to that environment. But that's not a style of management that I want to be part of.
Look, I'll just come back. Obviously, I was part of management. Just to go back to the high performance environment. A high performance environment, by virtue of the fact of what it is, the people in it, and the manager is no exception. They're highly motivated, driven, people with exceptionally high standards that don't take criticism. You know, they want to perform to the best of their ability. Peter's style of management 100% is direct. You know, he calls it as it is. I welcome that. That's necessary to achieve in that environment. So there's absolutely no issue with the style of management. I suppose it's what the girls have described is the environment that was created. Not for all, but for some. And that's where the issue was. The style of management, you know, to get results, you've got to be ruthless. You know, you've got to make the hard calls. And Peter is not afraid to make hard calls. And he's got a very direct, excellent style of management in that regard. So I think it's not so much the style, but perhaps maybe the environment experienced and created for some, the minority, not the majority.
Okay. Cora, in Peter's interview, he made it seem that this was between you and him. Is that the way it's been played out in the media, or is that unfair on you?
Yeah, well, I think that's the way it's been played out in the media. I don't think that's the fact. For some reason, it's been played out like that, and I really don't know where that narrative has come from. And maybe it is a convenient deflection of, you know, the real reasons that we've heard today.
Why would he have that narrative, that's what it is about? I mean, is that something that you're saying he's created then, or how would he go and put that on there?
Yeah, I just think because obviously I'm probably the most high profile member of the Mayo team, and I think, you know, once my name is used, it's straight away it's Cora, and you know, the headlines are grabbed, and you know, I think, yeah, it's just because who I am, and maybe I came back into the environment, and it was an easy excuse to use Cora. And I suppose, as you heard from the girls today, that wasn't at all the case.
Yeah, because he was going on about the freeze and everything. You know, so again, do you think that was a complete deflection tactic?
Yeah, obviously there's issues. You know, I'm not saying everything is all right. There was issues with the freeze and all that. You know, but again, and as he admitted in his podcast, there wasn't, which was an issue, direct communication about who would take the freeze. So yeah, I just think I was probably the easy target and the high profile person that had come back into the panel, and I suppose that was well created maybe well before now and before I come back, and we've heard that from the girls, and you know it was well in the media before I even came back. You know, he had a couple of interviews just as I was arriving home, and you know, I suppose that's where it all came from.
I suppose just on that, just as well, about Cora and the media speculation around her leading us and everything being orchestrated around her, I think that's really disrespectful to think that one player would actually try and orchestrate this and try and pull players along with them in the process. And equally, it's really hurtful that, and to think that, you know, people think that we're really naive, that we'd actually follow people when we have our minds of our own, obviously, as well. And it makes us seem like really weak people, to be honest. You know, funnily enough, before all this happened, we were, you know, we'd be identified as pretty strong characters, and yeah, we were proud of that, and we endorse that, and you know, we do demand the best, and we do have high expectations, and we do have high standards on things, but to say that one person led us in that light, is absolute nonsense.
Okay, go on, Hannes. Take it away. Yeah, I'll tell you when he's just gonna.
Okay, we're
going.
Yep.
Yep.
I'd just like to clarify, it was portrayed in the media that I was pressurised and influenced to leave the panel. I can safely say that is 100% not true. I'd like to think I'm my own person. I can stand on my own two feet and make decisions for myself. Probably the tipping point for me, you know, I think all these girls here, but especially Sarah Tierney, for the last 2.5 years, I've looked up to that girl. She's everything I ever want to be. A great leader, an amazing friend, and she's been there in the good times and the bad times for me. So sitting in a room, listening to see how she was treated and the emotion she shared, that was enough for me. I respect each and every girl for leaving the panel. Also, I respect the girls that decided to stay. Any opportunity to represent your county is an absolute honour and privilege. For me, I just couldn't do it. I'd be lying to myself and everyone if I could put on that Mayo jersey and represent and give an honest effort. It wasn't for me. I stood for what I believed was right. And basically, if you don't stand for anything, you'll fall for everything. And I just want to clarify that.
Now, since then, the Mayo Ladies County Board have issued a statement and they've dealt with some of the topics that those 14 players talked about in their press conference last night. So on the statement released 2 weeks ago by former players, they said, "We are of the opinion that this was an orchestrated and calculated statement designed to create maximum impact and garner maximum headlines." Regarding Cora Staunton's OTBAM interview 2 weeks ago, they said, "The playing environment under the management was deemed as unhealthy and she didn't feel it was a safe environment. These remarks have led us to release this statement and we are seeking further advice with regard to them. We must stress that at no stage in our meeting with them were these remarks used. We found that remaining players had been contacted and pressurised up to and including 2 days before the intercounty game with Cavan to try and convince them to leave the panel." On the topic of mediation and the future of this dispute, they said, "The players have accepted that a number of them did not fully address their issues with other members of the panel, and we welcome this. However, we are disappointed that they would refer to the mediation as an unfair process. The mediator in question is one of the most respected mediators in the country and has worked professionally in all areas of mediation, be it industrial or the sporting environment. The mediation process ended unresolved. It must be stated that while the players who have left been insinuating that their issues were not investigated, we, the County Board Executive, feel that we could not have done anything else reasonably expected of us." And then finally, on the topic of Carnacun and the potential ban that might be upheld coming their way this evening, they said, "The clubs are of the opinion that the Carnacun clubs' action in withdrawing their players from the senior panel went against the ethos of the LGFA in the manner that it was done and through the subsequent statement released. The club delegates felt that members of the Carnacun club were complicit in the whole event and had brought Mayo LGFA into disrepute by causing a very public storm through their actions and the harmful statement which followed. There was a lot of hurt and anger, and the clubs felt strongly that Carnacun should be sanctioned for bringing the organisation, their clubs and players into disrepute. As a County Board Executive, we were compelled to sanction the Carnacun club after an overwhelming majority vote. While we were acutely aware that the sanction would affect players who were not part of the walkout, we feel that it was the Carnacun club who removed their young players from a county panel where they would have enjoyed bright futures."
GAA on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.